Hey, BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
And we're back. We're back. Hey, Mandy, how are you?
Hey, Miss Tiffany. We are doing a very special midweek recording of Brown Ambition. Yes.
But we both have something in common. We've got something in common. I heard you won an award. Well, I saw the picture. First of all, let me say that your hair was everything. And that dress was really cute.
Oh, thank you very much. Hey, TJ Maxx.
Ow.
Circa 2013.
I was like, oh, look at Mandy. Snatched.
Thank you. You know what's funny? So thank you so much. Yes, I was awarded by the National Association of Black Journalists in New York for best online investigative story for a story I wrote last year about students who were cheated by the Corinthian College for-profit scandal. So really exciting. That story took me like probably 2 months, and I thought I many times like drank myself into a stupor because I was so stressed out. It was a hard story, but it's really nice a year later to get that recognition, especially from NABJ, because they've been my fam for a decade. Ever since I set foot on my college campus, I went straight to NABJ. I signed up, started out as a treasurer, worked my way up. I was president by my junior year, and it's such an amazing professional organization, really supportive of more inclusiveness and media, and it couldn't be like more important what NABJ does than times like now with what's happening in the news. Yeah. So it was a really nice night. And thank you for mentioning my hair, because guess who I ran into?
Who?
Miss Jessie herself. Well, not Miss Jessie herself. The founder of Miss Jessie, Miko Branch, was there because she was sponsoring the goodie bag. So, you know, I grabbed a couple goodie bags with her.
I was going to say, I might, you know what? These days, I don't know what to put in my locks, but that's awesome. I'm going to tell you a Miss Jessie story later.
Oh, okay. She handed me, of course, she, you know, black women, we are all about the branding. She literally pulled a book out of her purse and was like, here's my latest book.
And gave me the book. And I was like, okay. I can't, but I can't. Because that is so me. I'd be like, so you want to buy Janice a bracelet or nah?
She was really sweet. I met her through her one of her sort of publicists. His name is Patrick, and he's just like, oh, I mean, Patrick's one of these characters who you just feel like you want them to tell you stories all day long. He hosts like a karaoke night in Harlem like every weekend. He's just one of those people who knows everybody. So thank you, Patrick, if you're listening, for introducing us to Miss Miko Branch. And we might try and get her on the show. It may or may not be happening. Awesome. But yeah, it was lucky that my hair looked okay, because there she was in the flesh.
Right? She was like, I'm just, it's like dentists. They're like, I'm not looking at your teeth. They are looking at your teeth.
They are. I have to tell you, though, I started reading her book, and then I tried her products from the goodie bag last night on my hair. And I have tried all of the shelf products, except for like Miss Jessie's, because she tends to be more expensive. So I get the Shea and the Carol's Daughter. And what else have I tried? Everything. But I haven't tried Miss Jessie's stuff. I love it. I can't tell you what it's called. It's some kind of curling meringue. It all sounds like dessert. But it was, yeah, like I put it in my curls, and you know, I'm 2 years into this transition, and I'm struggling to get some parts of my hair want to be curly, and some parts are like, you've been beating us with a flat iron for 30 years, so we are going to stay straight. And yeah, like it really defined all my curls. So here's an unofficial plug for whatever Miss Jessie is selling, because it's good stuff.
So I have my own win this week. I too was honored by some brown folks, the National Association of Black Accountants, NABA.
Hey, NABA.
So it was really dope because my dad is an accountant and, you know, I teach money stuff. So they gave me the Entrepreneur Award, New Jersey's Finest Entrepreneur. I don't know about all that, but I'll take it.
Well, in what context did they mean fine?
No, like just mean they're looking.
Or like fine.
Yeah, no, I know. No, I think
it's such an interesting description for an award.
It is. And I thought that was weird. I mean, no shade nap. I'm totally excited. But I did was like, I mean, I'll take it. These arms ain't going home. Got to celebrate themselves.
You got to put that on your brand now, New Jersey's Finest.
I know. No, but really the award was for, they're looking for small businesses that, you know, not only make a profit, but that are shifting and changing the community for better. So I was like, oh, that's me. So it was really great because it was just a room. It was in Newark where I live. So that was really nice. And my sister came. So that was really nice as well. I invited her because, you know, Superman is tired of going to these awards where he just sits and says, oh, hi, yeah, I'm Superman. So so she came. So honestly, it was a really nice night. And she dressed me as per usual.
You
She's like,
beautiful. Great. I love that dress.
Thank you, JCPenney, honey. I think it was like $20.
Whoa, JCPenney.
Yes, I know. And honestly, I was, no shade, JCPenney, but let's be real, you were not really known for being fashionable. But she took me to buy clothes like earlier in the summer. And we saw this dress and she's like, you should get it. And I was like, but I don't have any place to wear it. She said, a place will appear. And so I'm glad I bought it because yesterday I didn't know what I was going to wear. And I looked in my closet and there it was with the tag still on it. And so there I was, $20 fly.
Hey, that's like, that's the universe at work right there.
Yes,
but don't use that if you're budgeting. Don't use that excuse for everything. If I buy this boat, the money to pay for it will appear.
No. Yeah, no, it was a really great night. So yeah, so two, look at us, two awards.
Yeah, it's always nice to be recognized. And did you have to give a little speech when you won?
I did. And so like I just talked about how an accountant changed my life, my father, and how what they're doing matters and how it changes the lives of people who are around them. And you just never know who you're going to touch and who they're going to touch as a result.
Leave it to you to make accounting make me want to tear up.
You my just brought was it like, down. That was good. I was like, what? She was like, you're getting good at this stuff. I was like, you now.
Yeah, I didn't realize I was going to have to give a speech. And they were honoring so many amazing journalists. Raheema Ellis from NBC won the Lifetime Achievement Award that night. Mm-hmm. She's one of those reporters and anchors who you see all the time. But she's like the backbone of some of those NBC news reports. And like on her, they did a really nice package for her and NBC produced it. And they had Lester Holt, Tom Brokaw talking about Raheema Ellis.
Wow.
And what was crazy, though, when she got up to the stage, she was accepting the Lifetime Achievement Award. This woman looks like she is 32, maybe 32, maybe 35, like a very wise 35. It's just so she looks so beautiful, so young. And she was like, just so you know, I'm not done yet. It was a really nice speech. It was hard to follow.
It was so there was a woman there who was being honored. I said, only black women. Her name is Natasha, was it Rogers? So her bio read, like, one, Natasha Rogers is a engineer, lawyer, has her MBA, worked at Goldman Sachs. Mandy, I was like, it was like four people in one. And she's 35 years old. And I'm looking at her like, how, houseway? How have you, Meanwhile, was born and raised in the projects of Newark. And I was, and I asked her how. She was like, honestly, I was singularly focused on not being broke.
Mm.
The first in her family to go to college. And she just said, growing up the way I grew up was so traumatizing that I honestly was like, I will not come back here. That I have to do better. So she said it just motivated her. And that she wasn't like collecting degrees for the sake of collecting them. She said that when she wanted to achieve a different goal, they would tell her, well, you need that. And she would just go get it.
I feel like you just described what Brown Ambition is all about.
For real. She wow. is, honestly.
That's
she,
a Brown I mean, Ambition moment right there.
Yes. She, and when you meet her, Mandy, just so like, oh, hey, what's up? Like, just, you clearly she's brilliant. I mean, you don't have an engineering, law, and MBA from like some of the top schools and just be like some like regular everyday thinking person. She's clearly brilliant, but so down to earth and so nice. And she was honestly like, I'm not gonna lie, at 35 I'm finally coming up for air. So like, what's going on? Like, what's happening out here in the world?
Are Brangelina still together?
She was like in college, she's like, I didn't
Janet
party,
Jackson's
I didn't...
pregnant. We might be going to Mars. Did you see the pictures of Janet? with her baby bump?
Yes, I did. And so I told her, I was like, I took her number. I was like, don't worry, girl. We're going to get you socialized. But we had such a great conversation about, like, you know, like just about life and relationships and just like, you know, achievement. And it was just such a really good conversation. And I just thought to myself, this is what I wish more people could see. It's just women like her who don't necessarily, you're not going to see her in the news or whatever necessarily, but she's amazing, you know?
Hmm. Go ahead. What was her name?
It was, you know, I'm like the worst. Like, let me see if I can find her.
Miss Goldman Sachs. Go ahead, Miss Goldman Sachs.
I remember her first name was Natasha, and
That's okay. We don't need to put her on blast like that. Just want to say hi, Miss Natasha. Yes. If you're listening, thank you for carrying the Brown Ambition flag.
Yes, and being amazing, and for, she said, no matter where she goes, she represents for Newark, and she wants to show that there, you know, there is good here, you know, because you know how people are about certain cities, you know.
We should share more. We have some amazing listeners out there. I don't know if Miss Natasha's a listener, but if you guys have little inspirational stories, I mean, feel free to go to brownambition.com, brownambitionpodcast.com, and you can just send us your story through the Ask Us Anything form. It's super easy. Just fill out your question and put your email, and bada bing, bada boom, you are in our inbox.
Yeah, because we'd love to hear about, like, people that represent Brown Ambition to you, just because it's always good to see that, you know, outside of the celebrity, there are amazing people that you know that we know. We'd love to honor them.
Yes, ma'am. And today's show is basically all about you guys. We are finally getting to the questions that we've been putting off. So we have a handful of questions today. So this show is going to be all about you, your money and career questions. And we'd love for you guys to continue sending us to those. Again, you can go to brownambitionpodcast.com, the brand new, fresh looking website that we just redesigned. There is a super easy way to send us questions. It's called the Ask Us Anything form. Just go there, submit your question, and you might hear it on the show. But before we get to questions, I got to hear about FinCon.
So FinCon was, first of all, it was so different in this way. So you know how usually FinCon's like 400 or 500 of your closest financial friends, right?
And for people who don't know, describe the FinCon is important to me and Tiff because it's where we met in person.
Yes.
The Mandy and Tiffany story.
FinCon is it started off as a financial bloggers conference, but it's since grown to a financial content conference. So you get bloggers, writers, speakers, educators, all things money and finance. They kind of gather here once a year, and it's all around the country. PT, who is the founder of FinCon, Philip Taylor, he decided this year he wanted it to be the biggest year yet. So typically FinCon is between 300 and 500 folks, and this year it was almost 1300, or about 1300.
Holy smokes,
Mandy! Honestly,
I don't think
Was like, that's exactly how the old folks felt. We were all like, I don't, because you know I'm used to going to FinCon and knowing not all the faces, but like a good chunk of them.
Yeah.
So you know, this time I went and I was like, I don't know you or you. Oh, you either. So it was, I mean, San Diego was beautiful. The location that he chose was beautiful. Everything looked great. So it was that, I mean, I felt both good and not good about the amount of people, because one, there were so many more brown people. Oh my gosh, Mandy. It was like a plethora of beautiful brown people.
Wow. That's a huge change from last year.
What? And we took over. What? So many of us won Plutus Awards. So Plutus Awards, for those of you who didn't know, are like the Emmys for financial educators, writers and stuff like that. And so I think like Tanya won from My Fat Finance, Ty and Talent from His and Her Money, some other Browns won. Me and Patrice hit the main stage. So right before the keynote, they had something called the Big Ideas, and it was like a TEDx style talk. So I went on Friday, Patrice went on Saturday. I don't think any brown person has ever hit the stage. So to have two this year was like amazing.
Wow, congrats.
And honestly, it was, so in that respect, they clearly heard our grumblings from last year about there being a lack of diversity. And this year, they really surged forward and had so many speakers, so many podcasters, so many people there. Oh, I have a picture for you from the podcast movement of, like, they have our picture right and center in one of their, on one of their banners.
Oh, word? Cool.
Mm-hmm, I have a picture to send you. I was like, I got to take it. Send Mandy. So, yeah, it was just, it was good in that way, in that there were way more people, like, you know, so people, more, way more people of color. But it was also, I felt like I lost touch with some of my old FinCon family. Yeah, but like I said, all in all, FinCon was fun. They're having it in Dallas, 2017, which is PT's hometown. Yeah, so I've heard a little whisperings that there might be some shifting in FinCon. I don't know. Yeah, I mean, like, you know, I'm sure he's tired. I don't know. Let me not even say.
Okay. Are we breaking news or are we breaking news? What's happening here? I know. Because, you know, Brenner Ambition listeners come to hear about the latest in FinCon drama.
I know.
That's exactly what they're here for.
I know. Oh, you're like, who, what? Let's move on. Okay, so, yes, that's FinCon news.
Okay. Well, congrats to all the powerful POCs representing FinCon.
Mm-hmm. The Browns. And yeah, that part was really great to really see, like, wow, so many great brown people here doing their thing.
And we both, today, it's been September. I feel like I don't even know where it went or like what all happened. Just so much happened in September. But the highlight was that wedding last weekend. These were my best friends. And I'll tell you the quick story of us. It's a romantic story. So I've been in my sister's wedding, but it was a very small, intimate wedding. I was the only one standing up with her. This was the first time I was like a bridesmaid in my best friend's wedding. And this is my friend Brian. He and I met, so flashback 2005, Hurricane Katrina hit the Gulf Coast. I was a freshman in college. I was home in my dorm with a nasty cold, and I was like flipping through MTV, and I saw an ad looking for volunteers they were going to send to the Gulf Coast to like help rebuild after Katrina. And they were accepting 100 kids from across the country, two from each state. And they were going to go to the Gulf Coast, Mississippi, Louisiana, and help them rebuild. And I entered, I don't know what possessed me. I entered this contest, and they picked me and another and like 100 other kids from around the country. And we all went. We were all just like babies. It was my first time flying on a plane by myself. I had never really traveled alone before. I had never even gone to like summer camp. I mean, I didn't, and I was going to spend a week with all these strangers, and it ended up being like the single most important week of my life. I'm not even being that dramatic about it, because the friends I made there were still friends to this day. And Brian was one of the very first people that I met, we were in Biloxi, Mississippi during that week. And it was just, that week is the reason why I became brave enough to travel by myself and do more volunteering. And it taught me how to be a leader. I kept going back every year and I became a team leader. I mean, just so impactful, and not least of which was because of the friendship. So Brian and I met, of course, during that trip. And then all my other best friends that are now all over the country, we all met. And now that we're all older, it's been 10 years. And I was part of Brian's wedding, and it like hit me when I was standing there watching him get married to his wife, Diana, who's also become a really good friend of mine. And I was like the biggest baby. It was real embarrassing. Aww. I was like doing not even a cute cry, like the ugly cry. Like I had to hide behind my bouquet. But it was just, you know, it's such a, I don't know, I've never been in a wedding like that before. It really felt like, damn, like full circle,
yeah,
seeing you, people you love each other and get married, and like all my other friends from that trip were there. And I don't know, it's amazing that we all came this far and we could all be together. It was just beautiful.
Oh, that's really, because you're like, you know, it's like I was talking to my best friend the other day. I saw her like downtown and she had her son, and you know, meanwhile I've known Drina since middle school. And so it still has not hit me that she has a child, because it's like you're making that transition in your mind that like people that are no longer 10 can now have kids. Like, you know what I mean? Like, and so like whenever I see her with her son, like my mind categorizes it as, oh, there's Drina with this kid. Like, like not her kid. And then she said something like, I don't know, like, you know, like tickled him or whatever. And then it hit me. I'm like, wait. Meanwhile, the baby is 1 year old and it's my godson. I'm like, wait, Drina, this is your baby. She looked at me like, what is wrong with you? I was like, no, it just hit me. Like, how is this happening? How are we procreating? Because it just seems weird when people get married have kids, people that you've known, like, you know, when you were too young to do those things. And when it happens, making that transition, it's like both emotional, it's cool, it's fun, but yeah, it's a lot. But so I could totally, you know,
it's wild. And Brian was like, yeah, this is no secret. If you know Brian, I love you, Brian. He listens to the show. He was one of our early fans. he was a little bit of a player back in the day. It's, you know, and a little bit of I'm going to use a D word, a little bit of a douche in some ways, a lovable douche, but a douche nonetheless. And we had our moments. But when I moved to New York City in 2010, he was one of my first people I called. And he and his cousin Tran, like, they lived in the teeny tiniest, I mean, they called it a two bedroom, but it was like two closets and a hallway. And they lived in that teeny tiny apartment. And Brian still was like, you can come stay with us. We have a little IKEA cot. We'll make it work. And I stayed there for 2 weeks. And, you know, that's the ASB, like the love that we had. And that's our friendship. And I'm just so happy for them. And it's just, and I'm next. And that was also tripping me out, because now that they're done, now it feels like, oh, shit. I got to put on a show now, because they did it. Like,
it was really pretty. Like, there was one picture that I saw that you posted. It was like she was kind of like far away. And I don't know. It was just so beautiful. It didn't even look like a real person or wedding. It was just beautiful.
She was a human precious moments doll. That's what she was.
Yes. That's exactly.
That is what Diana was. This goddess who could not think she was less of a goddess. I mean, she's like so humble. And I'm like, Diana, can you just stop for a second and just like accept that you are the beauty goddess queen that you are right now? Because literally 2 hours before her wedding, she was ziplining and doing kickball and playing lawn games and having a cookout. Like, that was the whole weekend, was like at camp. They had archery and canoeing and all this stuff. It was like so them, and just so beautiful.
Hey BA fam, this episode is sponsored by State Farm. Are you a small business owner looking for insurance that fits your needs and budget? Look no further than State Farm. State Farm agents are not just insurance providers, they're also small business owners who live and work right here in your community. They understand the unique challenges of running and protecting a small business. When it comes to small business insurance, State Farm knows what it takes. Create a plan that fits your needs and your budget. State Farm agents are ready to help you choose personalized policies that truly understand your business. Insure your small business with a fellow small business owner. Talk to a State Farm agent today and get started on personalized small business insurance that fits your needs. Like a good neighbor, State Farm is there. Talk to your local agent today.
So, without further ado, I cleaned out the inbox. You guys sent some excellent questions. I picked out a handful of some of my favorite questions. And again, please do not be shy. Send us your questions. Go to brownambitionpodcast.com. There's a super easy form you can fill out there. We love to hear from you guys. And while you're at it, like the page, leave us a review on iTunes, you know, just say, hey, tell a friend, do whatever you got to do. It helps us so much when you share and spread the word about Brown Ambition. Anything you want to add, Tiff?
No, I'm just listening. Like, okay. Because you know me, I'm like, when it comes to the communication piece, I'm like, I don't remember none of the emails. But if you go to brownambitionpodcast.com.
That's what we're just going to start doing. Just send them directly to our website. Is so nice now. It has all the information, our social media, our bios, photos, latest episodes. It is your go-to destination for Brown Ambition news.
So. Yes, everything's right there. So that I can remember.
Yes. Good. Got it. Only took us a year, but okay.
No judgment.
Okay. So here are some questions. Here's our first question. Nobody told me not to use their names. I'm using the names. I'm sorry. You know, call my lawyer if you're upset. So our first question is from someone named Kimoy. Hope I'm pronouncing that right. She says, I would really love if you guys can expand on something Tiffany mentioned once about how she did a visualization process to make room for the man in her life. I'd love if you could expand on this and share more tips on how I can prepare for the man in my life. I'm in my early 30s, and while I don't feel the pressure to have kids and I'm not sure if I want any, I still want to be married and be with the man of my dreams. Thanks in advance, Kimoy.
So this is what I did. Well, one, I was in my early 30s when I started this. I had reached out to a friend of mine. Like, the Budgetista was starting to take off, but every time I came home to an empty house, I was like, ugh, this sucks. Like, I wasn't really dating. I mean, I was dating, but he wasn't really a great fit. You know how you date some guys that you know, this is not anyone who I'm going to be spending the rest of my life with. This is just for now. And I was tired of for now, because when you go home, you're still by yourself. And I was finally ready, because I had not seriously dated anyone since my late 20s, and on purpose, because I was building myself. So I reached out to a friend who was successful. She's married with a child. And I said to her, she's an entrepreneur, like, how did you do it? Or, you know, like, what can I do? Because I feel like, you know, everything's going great except for my personal life, my love life, because family was good, friends were good, but my love life was not. And she said, Tiffany, how many hours a day do you work on the Budgetista? I said, I don't know, girl, like, all hours. And she said, how many hours a day do you work on your relationship? I'm like, well, there is no relationship. What's to work on? She was like, but work on, like, securing, like, love. I'm like, well, that's not how it works. She said, it is in your 30s. She said, in your 20s, you know, things can happen a little bit more organically. You don't have to necessarily be as intentional, you know, because I don't know why. I guess you're just, like, free and open. But she's like, you know, if you're at an age where you're wanting someone in your life and it's not happening as organically as you'd like, you have to put work. If you put a quarter of the work toward your love life that you did toward the Budgetista, you'd have someone. And I was like, at first it felt unnatural. Like, I'm not trying to put work toward it. I want to, you know, walk down the street and bump into someone and I drop my pen and he looks into my eyes and we fall madly in love. But she was just like, good luck with that. And so I thought about it and I said, okay. So one, I realized, she said, even if a man were to come into your life now, is there even space for him? And that resonated with me. I said, you know what? No, there isn't. So first thing I did was something, it seems like weird and corny, but I started creating physical space in my life just to be symbolic. So I started, like I usually sleep like wild all over the bed, and I started sleeping on one side of the bed because Boo was going to sleep on the other. I actually I opened up some closet space in my closet. You know, I opened up some space on my dresser just for the symbolism for me was I'm creating physical space in my space for someone. Usually, like, anybody who knows me knows I'm kind of like a tomboy at heart. I mean, I get dressed up to speak, but that is not me. So I usually will leave the house looking like, who shot Bob and why? So I stopped doing that. I was like, no, at least you don't have to get dressed up, but at least look decent. Like, if you see someone, you're not going to, like, avert your eyes because you know you look crazy. So, and then, too, leave the house. I am such a homebody. And I'm like, she's like, Tiffany, the man that you're going to marry is not going to knock on your door, you know, likely anyway, not likely. So I like actually started like leaving, because if I wasn't doing Budgetista stuff, I would never leave the house. And she was like, no, make it a point. Like, go, instead of doing work at home, walk to the cafe in a cute dress and do something there. So I started doing those things. I also started doing what I call mirror work, where I used to look in the mirror every day and tell myself that I was beautiful, amazing, smart. Like, before I left the house, there's a mirror right by the door, and I would stop in it and say, hey, beautiful, you're amazing, you're smart, you're this, you're that, just to pump myself up. And then I was open to dating non-traditional, like, my type. So that's what it all came down to. And then I also started looking, like, you know, I'm, like, so strategic about everything. I really started looking back through my old relationships mentally of, like, which ones, like, you know, were really great, which ones weren't really great, and why, how, you know, who did I feel my best with, so I could just be clear about what I was looking for, what I was open to find. Not like he had to be a doctor, lawyer, but like he had to be open to the fact that I work for myself and what that looks like. You know, I wanted someone who was a giver, because I was always dating takers because I'm an overgiver. So I was like, I'm tired of always feeling depleted. So I knew I wanted someone who was a giver. And I took the other things off, like, he has to be African American, he has to look a certain type of way. I took those things off and I said, what's really, really important? Him being a giver, him being naturally kind. I was looking for someone who wasn't just nice to me, but just nice in general. So those are the things I started looking for. And oddly enough, the man I ended up being with was someone who I had known from in my 20s. And we were friends. And he randomly hit me up after I started creating all this space. And we went out for like an ice cream kind of like date. And I was like, wow, this seems like, what? It just started to like tumble forward. And before I knew it, you know, here we are. And I think I'm pretty sure I'm getting my ring on my birthday.
Oh man, this ring saga.
I know. Y'all don't even know. I can't wait to share it all. Once I get it, I can't wait to share all the shenanigans. I'm not fully proud of myself, but I don't care. Y'all know I tell the truth. But yeah, so, yeah. You know, so I did. No, I'm just going to say that's what I would just suggest, is creating mental, physical, and like spiritual space in your life, and being open and honestly staying ready.
I think the key is being open. I think all the things you did probably, I mean, I don't think, like, I didn't do any of that stuff. But yeah. I think the being open to it, I think a lot of people get, like, start to feel like, oh, it's never going to happen for me. I'm never going to find him. It didn't work out with the last person. I'm not this. I'm not that. Men are dogs. Like, and you wrap yourself in that negative energy, and then you don't attract anyone because you're repelling them with that negative energy. So I think for me it was, I don't know, I was a little bit different. I'm also kind of uncomfortable assuming the role of like, I've made it. I found a man, you know, like I have so much wisdom to impart. I was a hot mess for a long time. I dated and slept with all the wrong people. Well, I mean, some right people, but made mistakes for sure. Moved to New York, had my fun. And I like, you know, had my fun or whatever. And it was around 2012-ish. I'll tell you when, it was the fall of 2012. And I was like, you know what? That was cool. I think I'm done. I kind of want a more something serious. I'm ready for what I deserve, which is, you know, someone who respects and loves me and like wants to be there all the time. And, you know, more of like a traditional relationship. And I just became really intentional. And I'm not going to say that even worked out so well. Because the first way I became intentional was to start professing my love for guys I was close with already. it was kind of like let's just throw something at the wall and see what sticks.
Hey, you. Love you. You're pretty cute. Love you,
we're
too.
We're really good friends. We should probably date each other. And
I'm not going to lie. I did that too, baby.
I mean, you got to work your way through your guy friends, right? You got to just go from one to one. Oh, that one's taken. Okay, fine. On to the next one. Oh, we've been friends for a while. He's cute enough, you know. So to the male friends who it had to endure that for me, I apologize. I was going through something. But it was necessary. Like, it was almost my, you know, when I was 14 years, or how old was I? 15 years old. I don't know what it is about in my brain. I like dare myself to do things. When I was 15 years old, there was a cute boy in school. And I was a new girl in school, okay? Brand new to the school. Didn't really have any friends. Super awky. But I had this cute boy and I rode the bus together. I don't even remember his name. And it was around Valentine's Day. And I was like, I'm just going to ask him out. I'm just going to ask him out on Valentine's Day. And I just psyched myself up. I had literally no girlfriends there to like witness or help me or whatever. And I just like went to his locker and I was like, hey, so-and-so, do you want to go out sometime? And he's like, oh, I'm sorry, my girlfriend's over there. And it was like my first rejection. And ever since then, I was like, well, okay, I experienced that. I can do anything now. So for me, it was more about like, I just was tired of wait. I always hate waiting for things to come to me in a way. And I just like rather go out there and get the answer right away. Like, are you into me? Do you want to date me? I'm making myself sound crazy. I'm really,
no,
I really am.
I admire, you're way more bold than I am. I'm always like really scared. So instead, I mean, like Mandy said, it's not like the things I did weren't for the magic of like, you know how people tell you like manifestation. And I mean, to a certain degree, I agree, but I'll say this, that it was more so to get myself in the mindset to be ready to have what it is that I wanted. So I did all those things really, totally. Not because like I thought to myself, oh, if I magically sleep on one side of the bed, he's going to come. No, but it was really like a daily reminder of, you know, Tiffany, you said you want this, so you have to make space, you know? And so it was more symbolic than anything else. So honestly, I mean, if you're not leaving the house, you know, you need to.
Yeah. It's all about the energy you put out, you know?
Yes.
And anyway, to finish my story, after making those wrong propositions, sounds also like a terrible, I'm my worst advocate. But yeah, striking out. And then I ended up, all my friends were like, get online, go on OkCupid. It's the shit. Like, you're going to find somebody on OkCupid. Oops, excuse me. I was like, online dating is lame. It's for old people. My mom met my stepdad on like Match.com when it first came out in 2002 or whatever. But I got on there and I tried, and it was almost like the list you made. Because on OkCupid, which I realize now is not the cool website anymore, because that's, you know, I feel really old now. All the young kids are on Tinder and stuff. But anyway, you put down, like, you basically put a list of what you want and you put what you're interested in, and they find you people who have that in common already. Mm-hmm. One thing I will say about OKC is that when I finally met Fiance Boo there, I messaged him. I never went on any dates. He was my very first OkCupid date, and I was on there for a couple of months, and I found out only the creepers would message you. Like, it'd be like so-and-so from New Jersey who has like a 20% match with you and like whatever, is wearing like sweatpants and his boxers hanging out in his photo. Those guys would message me, but I was like, I can't wait for someone to message me. I have to message the guys I'm interested in. And yeah, I saw his page, and I pinged him, and we went on a date like, I guess, a few weeks later, and the rest is history. And I know everyone who's online dating probably hates that story, because it's not a reflection of how it usually is. Like, your first date is, I'm actually like, sometimes I'm like, well, damn, I thought I was going to have my whole, you know, Sex in the City online dating. I was going to like write a blog about it, and then instantly just like found Mr. Man. And I mean, took me a while to realize it was Mr. The Man, because I was still in like my little, you know, kind of want something serious, kind of not sure phase.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I think it was all about just me intentionally looking for people who were interested mm-hmm. in a relationship, and stop fooling around with the guys who I knew, you know, were just, you know, out for having fun.
Yeah, that, I think, honestly, to me, now that I really think about it, that last piece that you just said made the most difference. I stopped dating the guy that was not really like a match. Remember I said I was like dating, I'm like, eh, he was kind of, I used to call him my fake boyfriend, and it was like, oh, somebody to hang out with and to like, you know, chill with, because like in the meantime I actually had to dead that, because I'm like, Tiffany, like, you're not leaving any room for the right guy when you have in the meantime hanging around, so let him go. And even though it was so comfortable, so when I finally let him go, I was able to like, okay, have space and room really for
ooh.
Apparently for coffee. Sorry. That came out of nowhere.
Lord.
I know. So, yeah. I don't know. I mean, honestly, there's no one way. I just, you know, open intention and getting out there.
Yes, ma'am. Okay. You owe us $1,000 now. No, I'm kidding. next question is from Erica. She asks, can you talk about writing goodwill letters to companies to have negative marks removed from your credit report? Have you all done this or know someone who has? I love the show. Your website looks great, too. Thanks, Miss Erica. I will pass that on to our web developer, Miss Terry. Okay, yeah. Goodwill letters to companies to have negative marks removed from credit reports. You must have dealt with this at some point. I know I have.
Yeah. I mean, I'll say this, that you have to remember when you write a goodwill letter that companies are under no obligation to comply, because that's really the purpose of the goodwill letters, that you're just asking like, hey, and because people think this about their credit report, that people will tell me this all the time. Hey, Tiffany, I had this negative mark. I was late, but I'm on time now and I'm fully paid up. Why is it still there? I'm like, girl, because it happened. I mean, your credit report is supposed to be a report of what has happened. Just because you've made better decisions, so that better decision will be reflected along with the fact that at one point you didn't make good decisions.
Right.
So, you know, so you have to keep that in mind. So the company's not doing anything wrong by keeping your poor decisions on your credit report. You know, after a while they fall off, but if it was just like a few months ago or a couple of years ago, they're likely still going to be there. Now, you can write a letter asking that they remove them, especially if you've been on time. This is what I suggest to people, is that if you're making like a lump sum payment or paying most of it off, like before you make that payment, making that request, like, hey, I'm about to send my lump sum payment, I know I'm late, can I ask that you do this after I submit this payment? And sometimes you can get them to agree, And then if they agree on paper, like via email or via letter or whatever, and they don't take it off, you can send that to the credit bureaus to say, hey, they agreed to take it off and they have not.
Yeah, and you should always get a letter, some sort of letter with the agreement. But what you were talking about, making a lump sum payment, is that like a form of settling the debt? Like, do you mean paying the entire thing off?
Well, either way. So I find that a couple of my friends, much to their shame, were actually work for like credit collection agencies. And they told me that if you're either, going to pay, like, let's just say, you owe $30 and for whatever reason you forgot to pay it. So now it's on your credit report and you're just going to go ahead and pay the $30. So before doing so, working out some sort of deal, because ultimately the credit people that you owe, they don't care about your credit report and score. They just want their money. So if you're kind of like, not that you're dangling the carrot, but basically you are like, hey, I've got your $30. Could you guys take this off completely once I give it to you? Like I said, they don't have to, but that's something you could definitely ask. But let's just say you are going to settle because you owe $10,000 and you're like, I don't have it. And they've agreed to settle for $3,000. So typically if they're going to settle for $3,000, they're going to want a lump sum. Like no one's trying to settle for $3,000, $20 a month is what you're paying.
Yeah.
So, if you're going to settle and you're going to give them that lump sum, ask. Now, the more that you're settling for, the more that you're getting off, the less likely they're going to be accommodating. So, if you owe 10 and you're going to be paying 1500, they're probably going to be like, girl, you're lucky that you don't have to pay this 8500, but so the more that you're kind of giving, the more leeway you have to say, I'm about to send this payment, but I would love in writing for you to say that you'll take this off my credit report as a result. Like I said, it's just lump sum just gives you more leeway because if I'm paying you month to month, then there's no guarantee that I'm going to finish paying you. Mm-hmm. So it's like, so why should I take this off? And we have 3 years until you finish paying this off. No. So I would negotiate with a lump sum payment.
And it usually works best if you've already missed a bunch of payments, like when you're in delinquency, because what lenders will do anyway is they're eventually going to sell your debt to a debt collector.
Yep.
And they're going to sell it to them for pennies on the dollar for whatever it was actually worth. So sometimes they accept settlements or accept lump sum payments from you because they're probably going to make more money off that lump sum than if they were to sell it to a debt collector. And they know that.
Exactly.
It can be done. What I will say is if it's over a certain amount, I believe you have to, that forgiven debt, the amount that they forgive, is treated as taxable income. So you may receive a tax form from the lender saying, we forgave you for $10,000. Now you have to report this on your taxes and you may actually have to pay taxes on that money. So it may not be a completely clean break from the debt.
So typically it's like anything over like $600. But my accountant did tell me if your net worth is zero or negative, then you won't have to. And most people's net worth, like if you're owing that much money, you probably don't have a net worth that's going to force you to pay taxes on it. But still, you just never know. That's definitely a possibility.
Yes, ma'am. So let's do one more question. Let's see. So this is a super long question. All right. So let's do one more question. This was a super long question. I'm just going to get to what I think is the real crux of her question. And it's from someone named Sunny. So Sunny says she's trying to get an apartment. She says my credit score has remained around 655 for quite some time. I pay all my bills before they're due. I earn over $2,500 per month. Recently, I applied for a studio apartment where the rent was just $775 a month with everything included minus electricity. Sunny, where do you live? Because I am moving there. Because that is so cheap. She says, however, the rental company came back to me and declined me. They said because my credit line was so small and I never expanded it over the course of using credit and that I would require a cosigner. I don't know what to do. Please help me. So basically, she has a short credit history because she waited so long to get her first card. And then when she got it, she ran into some issues paying the bills and her score is now around 655. I ran into something similar.
So, yeah, that's like that. Because she's like at that place where it's like it's not terrible, but it's not that good.
It sucks, So part of the question I didn't read, she says, I've never bothered getting more credit because I'm in the habit of couponing, saving and just buying stuff with cash. And it's almost like in the world we live in today, you're almost punished if you don't use credit, because you need credit to get good credit. And although using cash can definitely keep, and it's good to use cash because you're staying out of debt, when it comes time to apply for things like apartments, get a car loan, mortgage loan, they want to see a long sort of credit history. So I feel for her.
Yeah. And it is sucky. This is why I kind of, like, I didn't understand why my dad had me get, like, a credit card when I was 18 in college. And he was like, but you're not allowed to use it for anything but books. And but it was because, and I still have that same credit card. And honestly, the credit limit now is $30,000. And I don't even, I mean, for me to swipe over $1,000 is a lot. And I use it for business and pay it off in full. But I allowed it to expand like that because for that reason. It's because I knew, well, one, you have to have the discipline, because you don't want to have a limit of $30,000 and not have the discipline not to spend $30,000. But two, I use it because I wanted to show that, like, look, I can manage this level of credit available to me. So that part sucks. I would just say that, I mean, you can call the person that you have the credit card with and see if you can get an expansion. But know this, that asking for them to increase your credit limit, that might result in a harder inquiry. So ask that, because sometimes they have to look into your credit to see if they're going to allot you more credit. And a hard inquiry, will temporarily lower your score. It's not for a super long time.
It's kind of a trade-off, because you do, like, it's helping your score by having a larger line of credit available to you, but then you get that little ping, the little ding on your score from asking for more money.
Exactly.
I feel like my advice would be, okay, so you need a I understand why they're asking you for a cosigner. Rental companies sometimes, a lot of times, do credit background checks and may ask for a cosigner. If no one's willing to be a co-signer, you might just need to find another place to go, or you can write them a letter. You know, I did this when I first moved to New York. I had to put in an application with my landlord, and her lawyer, you know, did the credit background check. And I didn't realize, I'd never checked my credit before, and my credit score was terrible, because when I was in college, someone opened up a Chase credit card under my name, racked up $12,000 and never paid it. I never heard about it, never knew about it, because I never checked my credit. And that's how I found out. He was like, I can't approve you because this happened. So I had to file disputes with the credit bureaus, and I wrote the landlord a very long letter explaining what happened, showing proof that I filed a dispute. And based on their own, you know, they were just being, basically, it was up to them, and they were nice, and they decided to take a, you know, risk on me. I also sent a letter of referral from a previous landlord who said I'd always paid the rent on time and that I was a good tenant. And I think that went a long way toward convincing them to accept my application, despite what my credit history showed. So that's one thing you could try. Either, you know, get some letters of recommendation, write a letter to them explaining what your situation is, or try and find someone, you know, who you trust and who trusts you to be a co-signer, or, you know, unfortunately, you may have to find somewhere else.
Yeah. And the letters do really work, because I remember when I went to buy my house, I was like 25, and I didn't have like a whole bunch of like debt and credit and stuff. And so I actually had to get my landlord to write a letter. I had to get it notarized, and I had to show like bank statements showing that, like, yes, on the first of every month, I made my my rent payment for like the last 2 years. So that helped. That went a long way, because ultimately what they're really doing is trying to figure out, are you the type to pay? So if you can show them that. Exactly. If you could show that to them through alternative means, then that should be helpful.
Yes, Miss Sunny. Good luck to you.
I like your name too, Sunny.
Miss Sunny. I think it was a pseudonym, but I like it too.
Yeah, we're just going to call you that anyway.
All right, our lovely listeners. So we have some sort of sad news, I guess. We're going to be one podcast short for October, yes. I believe. Tiffany, for exciting reasons. I'm heading to London with my little hermanito, my little brother, today for a brother-sister trip to London. And Miss Tiffany is going to Paris.
Yes, and I'm going to Paris and Prague, which I'm super excited about. I leave on next week, and I'm like, yes, I've never been to Paris, although I've been to France. And so, yeah, so we will be gallivanting, and we won't be able to tape, but we will think of you as we enjoy Europe. we'll come back with some great stories.
And maybe some croissant.
Yeah, well, we won't be able to share them. With each other, maybe.
You'll be there in spirit, listeners. So... In the meantime, please go to brunambitionpodcast.com. Send us your questions, comments. We've gotten a lot of lovely emails from people lately about the show and what it means to them. Love the emails, but we love even more when you take the time and leave us reviews on iTunes or wherever you listen, Stitcher, SoundCloud. Leave us a kind note there. It lets other people find the show and lets everyone know what you already know, which is that we are awesome.
You already know.
And if you don't know, now you know.
Now you know.
Listeners.
I know. I was like, wait. I when I got to that piece, I said, uh-oh.
It's too early for all that. Nope. Mm-mm. You're not going to get me. All right. Well, bon voyage. Yeah, wish me luck. I haven't been to London before. I'm excited.
Oh, okay. I think you'll enjoy. I've been twice and it's not my thing.
Oh, that's right. You hate it. Yeah. Okay. Never mind. I'm talking to you about it.
Hi, baby. Have a good trip.
All right. Bye, girl.
Mike Carruthers shares little pieces of intel and interviews you can use to improve your life on the Something You Should Know podcast.
The next time you're looking for a job and have to write a cover letter, here's some advice from Skip Freeman, author of a book called Headhunter's Hiring Secrets. Add a P.S. to the bottom of that cover letter. That can actually increase the chances of that letter being read by up to 75%. Some people actually glance down and read the P.S. first.
Something You Should Know. Search on YouTube or wherever you listen.